Hello and welcome to this LDCU Talking Online Learning Podcast. My name is Jim Judges. I'm a Senior Academic Technologist at the University of Warwick. And in this interview and discussion, I have the pleasure of meeting Dr. Isabel Fisher, who's an Associate Professor of Information Systems Management at Warwick Business School. This was a super interesting discussion for me, and Isabel kindly took the time to tell me about her use of blogs for assessment, as well as briefly discussing vlogging too. In the second half of the conversation, Isabel talks about the future of assessment and research into automatic marking using AI for formative and summative feedback. We also got to talk about some experiences of moving to online learning, including some of the benefits afforded to previously excluded groups as some learning experiences have become more democratized. And we also go on to hear about the arrival of the metaverse and the possible impact on teaching, as well as a quick mention of the new and very exciting Warwick Esports Centre and how Isabel and her students will be integrating and combining esports and the metaverse into her teaching this term. So lots of exciting and interesting content that really is worth a listen. I'm here with Isabel Fisher, but rather than me introduce you, perhaps you could introduce yourself, Isabel. Tell us what you do here at Warwick. What's your role?
Hi, Jim. Thanks for having me. And I'm in WBS, and I'm reader of information systems in the ISM Information Systems and Management Group. And my background, though, is not at all in academia. I have an industry background, and I worked for over 20 years in the payment card industry in technologies. And the link there is the technology side, which makes me interested in passing on some of the knowledge I learned those 20 years in industry to my students. What I'm particularly interested in is making sure that what students learn in my modules is relevant for the future.
Excellent. Well, it sounds like perhaps we've got you to thank for the fact that we can all use our pay and go cards. Is that right? Were you involved in?
I was in contactless payment. Yes, actually, I was. I was at Visa at the time, and I was doing the at the time in finance, and we were developing the business model for acquiring and issuing banks, and I was leading this actually.
So excellent. Well, there are some parallels there, of course, in the way that we've been keen to use the contactless payment for obvious reason, but then also the way that we've not had much choice about online learning. So there are some parallels there, but we'll perhaps come to that. Great to meet you then, Isabel. So I'm interested in talking to you, first of all, about an initiative that I've heard about, which is you've been using blogs for assessment with your students. So perhaps you could say what sort of programs and modules do you teach on, and then you could maybe tell us about this initiative when you're ready.
Okay. The at undergraduate levels, it's design thinking for digital innovation. And that's one of the modules where I use blogs as a form of assessment. And I also teach digital transformation for MBA students. And again, students had to use blogs. And then I can talk about this difference between undergraduate students and MBA students writing blogs, because it's a different approach.
Yeah.
And I also do digital marketing. And students will change this year to blogs, but they didn't do it in the past.
So what about this then? So how are you encouraging your students to use blogs, and indeed perhaps starting with the undergraduates, if you're happy to start there? What do you ask them to do? What do they have to do for their activity?
So they have to invent the future, really. I want them to think about the future. And so they have to think about a process, a service, a product that they would want to develop and that they want to communicate to other stakeholders about. So the idea of a blog is about being out in the open and communicate that you are interested in this type of development, that you are interested in technologies, that you know how to communicate in these areas. Rather than writing an essay, which you keep on your, well, let's say, C drive, and you submit it once and you forget about it. The idea about blogs is that you strengthen your online presence in posting your blog, for example, on your LinkedIn profile or using another tool like Towards Data Science or developing your own web page to communicate those the blog, and that you are there and you create your, as I said, this online presence, and people know about you and your interests.
Yeah, this is interesting here. I was talking to somebody earlier today, actually, about WordPress, which, of course, is an industry popular and standard way of blogging. Do any of your students use that tool, or what tends to be the most popular?
The most popular is LinkedIn. Students now start to have their LinkedIn profiles and work in LinkedIn. But WordPress also, I recommend it, but it's not the preferred one. The preferred is LinkedIn.
Oh, well, that's interesting to know. And perhaps I can understand with your business students and possibly an eye on future careers that LinkedIn would be more popular, maybe. But when you say blog, it's got some parallels also with podcasting, because we sometimes use the word podcast to represent just one recording rather than a series of recordings. And likewise with blogs, a blog post might be one entry, but typically a blog would be a series of entries. So do you expect the students to post more than once, or can it be just one post?
Well, first of all, because we're academics, they cannot post them prior to submitting them for the assessment. Okay. So because the assessment has to go via Turnitin. Make sure it's all genuine work. So first they submit in one go, via Turnitin, and then afterwards it's up to them to decide how they are going to blog it. But the first submission has to be directly on our MyWBS page.
Yes.
And it's only afterwards that they can do the open access to on LinkedIn or any other media.
But
interesting, because you mentioned podcasts as part of their group work. Students have to produce a blog rather than a blog. Because I want to bring in the word, the spoken word, and the images as well. They first do a group assignment where they produce jointly a blog, and then they do their individual assignment using a written blog.
Yes. For anybody who might not be aware of the vlog, then I guess vlogs are everywhere in a way, aren't they? Because with TikTok and YouTube and videos online, then video recordings are still popular and probably increasingly so. But what sort of minimum requirements do you put on them? Do you say it's got to be at least 5 minutes? It's got to involve at least, all three of you? Or what are the parameters for the vlog, out of interest?
Oh, well, I'm very, because the idea is here to be creative. So I try to be as little restrictive as possible. And lengthwise, it has to be, let's say, 5 minutes. And then there are two elements of it. They have to think critically and do a meta commentary on their work. And they also have to do like a TikTok video or a social media post in some form where they're talking about the product they're developing. Because we started off talking about the design thinking module. In design thinking, you're thinking about, you're designing something which you have to present.
Yes.
And you present it, and then you have to do this meta commentary on the process of developing your product, service, or whatever you developed. But because after all, we also want to hear their critical thinking.
Yes.
It's not just presenting something and said, this is what I've designed. We want them to think critically about the entire process of designing.
This is good. And can I ask you a question that I'm not clear about? The ideas that the students are posting in the vlog and in the blog, are they real ideas that may well turn into something, or are they mainly fictitious?
Okay, that's interesting, because this is, it says, well, how do I market? So for example, we have the example of a fridge. You open the fridge and the fridge tells you have to buy something, and it buys it automatically. The idea is not new, but ever so often students say, I had this idea about this fridge, and it's only at the end that I find out that actually it already exists. Yeah. So how can I assess it? And this is where the critical thinking is important. Because it's the critical thinking that is innovative, even if the idea as such isn't that innovative. Mm. But it's the critical thinking that I can then assess on its merits. And so some are very, very fictitious. And I think that's fantastic. Because, if you think about the Gartner hype curve of digital innovation. And you see, they're always like the hypes and the troughs. And actually, it is great that they have ideas that might not be relevant in the next few years, but might develop in 10 years' time.
Yes.
But at the same time, if somebody thinks or says they have thought about the fridge for the first time and it has already been developed, then, you know, it's difficult for me as an assessor to then say, ah, nah, because there might be ideas that are out there which I don't know.
So if I'm hearing you right, then you are really assessing their academic skills and their skills of reflection, just as you would in any other assignments. I'm sure the students must enjoy it, but I guess some do, some don't. What's the feedback been like, actually? What do the students say?
So this is now the interesting bit, is about MBA students versus undergraduate students. Undergraduate students come from an environment, A-levels environment, where they get told exactly what they have to do, and they're happy to just reproduce what they've been asked for. So it's very, very much more difficult for undergraduate students to do an assessment which requires them to think about the future without having clear criteria of right or wrong.
Yeah.
So actually, undergraduate students embrace this less, or they're not as happy, than MBA students.
Yes.
MBA students see straight away the benefit it has for their career. They have the working environment where they actually want to do something for their own workplace.
Yes, yes.
And they really love the love doing it. Whereas the undergraduates, I have to warm them up to the idea.
Yes.
And interestingly, they like the process of designing. So it's called a design thinking sprint, where you have a certain or specific amount of time to develop something. This quick thinking of, I have 2 hours to think about something, really works for the undergraduate students, because they think, that's great. So, you know, there's certain steps involved, and you follow step by step, and you have 5 minutes, 5 minutes to think about the personas. You have 5 minutes to think about the, shopping experience. That works with them, because it comes back to this, how they grew up in having been told exactly what to do at any point.
Yes, yes, yes.
And my assignment I hope to take them a little bit away from it towards the workplace, because what I call this post-course consciousness is that I know for the workplace, we have to move, or we have to transform from this being told what to do to being creative and doing what you think is important.
Yes.
And I try to take them on this journey.
Well, that sounds great. And I like the idea of post-course consciousness, because I haven't heard that phrase before. This sounds great. But do you want to say something more just about that post-course consciousness, please?
It's not necessarily me who invented the word, but it's something, I don't know who is, I've been using it a lot, because of my background, that I feel, I have to be careful here, that with 20 years work experience, I do know a little bit of what students are expected to do in the workplace.
Yes.
Acknowledging, of course, that the workplace evolves, and that's where my teaching comes in thinking about how it evolves.
Yes.
So basically, let me just talk about employability skills first, and then
please.
I talk about the difference. Employability skills, for me, this design thinking module, for example, helps with assessment centers. Because when you get a task in assessment centers, and you often have to work with groups, having this approach of design thinking helps you to actually lead the group. Because business students are seen as having to lead others. So you have a tool ready to hand, a skill. We're talking here knowledge versus skill. A skill ready to hand, which you can then use straight away and get the group behind you.
Yeah.
So that's what I think, like, just for the career centers, it helps. And it's the skills rather than knowledge, which also links to what I call this post-course consciousness. It's in the workplace, having gained knowledge is less relevant than having gained certain types of skills, like effective communication skills through writing blogs or producing blogs, and just being confident about your communication generally will help you more in the workplace than having discussed them, let's say, Plato's or Socrates. And even though they are, of course, important, you know, I teach ethics as well, and then ethics linked to AI. So it's important to have those concepts, but it's important also to be able to apply them in skills and yep. get the skills to
great
to show that you have the knowledge.
This is good. This all sounds really exciting stuff, and I'm sure your students will either appreciate it at the time or perhaps appreciate it later. And as you suggest, maybe in the assessment centre or in the interview or wherever, they've got more stories to tell, haven't they? They've got more examples, more to draw on. This sounds great.
And perhaps about this appreciating later, I'm very, very pleased that many students stay in contact with me afterwards, and they come then back to guest speaking.
Yes.
As guest speakers. And I know you personally are interested in online learning. I think online learning allowed me to involve many more guest speakers than in a face-to-face environment. Many more guest speakers who are not, let's say, in the Coventry Warwick area, but all around the world, and yes. happy to talk and also link it to their own studies before, and just being there, that was made a massive difference.
This is a good point, actually, and it is something that others have mentioned, but it is the case that if I just need to give up 20 minutes or half an hour to drop into your session or your lecture, then that's fine. But if I've got to travel by train and give up a day or travel halfway around the world, then it's not so easy. So this is good, and bringing experts into the classroom and perhaps past students as well is great. And what about, I guess most students will do this activity and then move on, but do you have any sense whether any of them perhaps have gone on to continue the blogging process or perhaps to develop their skills or even use these skills elsewhere?
Interestingly, I know one of my former students who had to use it for the workplace. So it's not anymore blogging your own ideas, it's blogging on behalf of companies.
Yes, yeah.
It's just so important. And especially when you start, you're often the person who is seen as the young generation who can do those things. Can you do the TikTok videos? Can you do, can you write a blog on this? And that's what my former students say, which helps.
What about the assessment process? Because marking a pile of essays is hard enough. But perhaps assessing blogs and vlogs can make it even more time consuming. How do you find the assessment process?
Interesting that you say this, because it is just very, very time consuming. And actually, I'm always in this dilemma thinking, shall I do an assessment like everybody else, or shall I do this? And then every time I think, oh, okay, I do it one last time. But it's just every time I regret it, because it is just so much more time consuming. One initiative I'm working on is I'm thinking of using machine learning for assessments. Students are actively engaged in this process as well. It's at the moment we are looking at statistical features. So we are reviewing written assignments for certain statistical features, which are then linking to, certain grades. At the moment, just to emphasize, I have ethics approval for this process, and we are still only doing it so that students voluntarily participate. Prior to having to submit their assignment, they have the opportunity to submit it to, let's call it, machine learning.
Yeah.
But we have to be careful because, it's statistical features is a subform, but let's call it machine learning for simplification. So they submit it and they get feedback. So they get feedback. Some feedback is not that machine learning. It's just simple. Your sentences are too long. Your referencing is not correct. You don't use any, academic references. It's all very much just internet sources. Think about using more of this type of words, those type of feedback. However, long term, I hope to make it a little bit more machine learning, starting with like unsupervised learning, where actually the AI understands yeah. why I mark in a certain way and tells me why I mark certain things. That might help me as well with streamlining My mind, as we said before, it's so time consuming.
Yes, well, maybe that could help in the future, although should your colleagues be nervous about the arrival of the robot teacher? Should we be worried that all marking will take place automatically in the future? But maybe our colleagues don't have too much to worry about, because presumably if we get the machine to do the heavy lifting, we have more time to do some of the more important activities.
Absolutely. The idea of getting the machine to actually help with the marking, but not the marking, it's providing formative feedback. When we talk marking, we mean formative feedback or even summative feedback. So, but having the machines who give more feedback to students allow us as lecturers to have more time for discussions with students on their actual work, and for them to liaise back to us and have a proper communication about their assignments. Because at the moment, it's very much you submit your assignment, you get feedback. At my previous university, we know feedback and marks were submitted separately, and you could see how many students actually look at the feedback versus just at the mark.
Yep.
And it's a small proportion actually who then open the feedback and try to learn from the feedback they receive.
Yes.
Many students see at the moment, they just want to know the mark,
yep.
the grade yep. they got. And having the machine involved in providing feedback in the formative process and later on allows us to have more time to work with them on the improvement of their actual work, and thus to provide true learning.
And just to clarify, that first round of feedback, is that coming back automatically then? Is that you're not providing that? That's the machine providing that.
Exactly.
Is that right?
So there's a big disclaimer when the students submit it to say, actually, you might want to completely ignore what you're told. That, yep. you know, it's done automatically.
Okay.
Submit, they get feedback, and they do with it what they want to do with it.
That sounds fascinating. And I'm assuming that that's easier to point at written assignments rather than perhaps a video or even a blog at the moment.
It is, even though I haven't done it yet. Voice recognition should allow us to actually make improvements there as well. Mm. So in the past, and I'm not doing it at the moment, but in the past, rather than having the group assignment, which is oral and, you know, verbal communication, I asked students to do elevator pitches. And I invited people from industry, and we sat together, always a panel, so it was a bit, you know, a bit daunting for students. Mm. They had to come in. They had to do their 2-minute elevator pitch and then answer some Q&A.
Yeah.
And students really liked it because it was a novel experience. And we tested it as well. Students had the opportunity to first try once in a safe environment and then once in the assessed environment. It's just, again, too much work at the moment for me to do it, because by the time I have the industry experts and then every student comes in, 10 minutes per student for the minor verbal, you know, the minor component takes time. Having said this, if we had this better voice recognition, then we could work with it, you know, where they have
yeah.
to use it, and then I can see the transcript. And again, machine learning yeah. could mark it and could see how things are.
No, this is interesting. This is interesting. And it's amazing how well the technology has developed so that a transcript from a video recording like this across Teams that we're doing now can identify the different voices. So I can imagine it wouldn't be too big a leap to connect these systems. So, yeah, an interesting future to look forward to. Please.
We emphasize it's a lot about formative feedback.
Yes.
Because we want to give students more opportunities to actually practice what they afterwards are assessed on.
That's
and
right.
practice, coming back to this post-course consciousness, elevator pitches is
yes.
something that you need to practice. You need to
yes.
get used to actually you're in the workplace, you're meeting somebody
yeah.
and that person asks you a question and you have to have an answer ready.
Yes.
And so my own research, my own educational research is about gender differences. That actually women often starting in higher education and in continuing in the workplace are busy doing, while men are focusing on good communication of what they are doing. So we have this, and this is, you know, just not just my research, other research as well. It's just tapping into a pool of research which says women should spend more time actually thinking about their communication to others about what they do, rather than just being busy doing.
Okay.
And if we don't practice it in higher education, those women continue to be just busy doing rather than taking the time to think about charismatic communication about their projects. And so
What would be an example of that then, would you suggest? So what would you recommend fellow female academics? What should they be doing more of?
It's not the academics, it's the students.
I apologize. That's my misunderstanding.
No, it's the students. When we educate our students, I want them to do more verbal, like the Americans do it a lot, much more having been assessed on their verbal communication skills.
And
practicing their verbal communication skills.
Okay. That makes sense.
In the workplace, somebody comes and sees them and they talk about the fantastic work they did.
I see. That makes more sense. Thank you. By the way, you're getting darker and darker and disappearing. The same thing happens here if I forget to turn the lights on. Yes, as we slowly descend into midnight. So that's good to hear about. I wonder if I could just broaden things out. What about your move to online learning? Am I right to assume then that you moved perhaps your undergraduate teaching from face-to-face to online last year, and then has it come back to face-to-face? So do you want to say anything about the experience there, and then how does that compare to the MBA? Because was that always a mix of blend?
Well, personally, my own teaching was always face-to-face. I then had to change everything to online because I taught, you know, when the pandemic started, I had summer teaching both MBA and other master's student. And then eventually it changed to hybrid.
Yes.
And so that's, you know, from my pedagogic research, I think different student groups appreciate the move to hybrid teaching differently.
Yes.
And actually the interesting bit is not my own experience, but is if the experience of students by different demographic characteristics.
Okay.
Students from minority groups actually embraced this online environment where everybody is equal, much more, let's say, than the dominant white student who actually feels they lose out a little bit of their status. So the interesting bit for me is how online learning democratized.
Yes.
Learning.
That's right.
And in students of, you know, like minority groups actually suddenly felt empowered because
that's
they
interesting.
Were one of
that's
equals.
Interesting. And, yes. Yeah. This is interesting, and I have a theory that it has perhaps done similar things in the workplace, and that if you are a manager and you have a fancy office and you have other trappings associated with being perhaps a senior, then you yourself will lose out by working from home and having to sit in your kitchen. And perhaps we've seen a similar democratization and flattening of hierarchies by using Teams to support work as well.
Absolutely. I haven't got, you know, I'm not researching the topic, but I assume yes.
Might make sense. Yeah. So some groups perhaps have enjoyed the move to online and possibly benefited in the way you've described. Some may feel that they've lost out. I'm interested in the hybrid situation, because that's a very challenging and difficult mode of teaching, which almost falls between the two, you know, face to face or online. We can manage them, but trying to do both at the same time, is that what you're talking about? Do you have students who are online as well as in the classroom? How have you got on with that?
So for our MBA teaching, we have a learning technologist in the room who represents the online participants. So when they raise their hand, the learning technologist raises their hand. And so we, for the MBA it worked well. For undergraduate teaching, I think, I naturally then focus more on the students present in the room because they're there in front of you. However, we're coming back to some students actually don't mind being in the background and just, so it's again, it's as long as the hybrid teaching is students' choice,
yes,
rather than them having to not the choice. I think it's okay.
Yes.
So like in secondary school, where the physical distance meant that like 1 week some students were working from home and others in the school, those things don't really work. And no. I know other teachers really unhappy about hybrid teaching.
Yes, and just thinking about the technical matter, one of the challenges, it's not so bad when you're stood at the front talking to your students, whether they're online or sat in the room, might not matter. But when you ask them to break into pairs or groups, or maybe even when somebody in the classroom asks a question, you know, these can be challenging. So are you still able to teach in the way that you want to teach?
As part of our teaching, we also learners at the same time. So we have this WBS Teaching Academy, for example. And actually, I see as a student the difficulties of group work much more than I see them actually as a lecturer. Because as a lecturer, you think, I send them out in their groups and they're working fine.
Yeah. Yeah.
But if you're from the student perspective, it is actually very difficult from the start. Did I have clear enough instructions? Do I know what we're doing? And then it's always the thing. Some people is thinking this is the moment now where we can get a tea or coffee and check on social media. And so it's this, you know, if you're in the group, in the room, the physical presence of a lecturer means that people are more on task than in those breakout groups. Another thing which don't really work well in the breakout groups is this return to the main classroom, because you're in the middle of an idea, you're expressing it, and suddenly you're saying it out loud.
Yeah, to the whole group. And just out of interest, because we are one organisation, but we sometimes very separate when it comes to the different tools we're using, WBS and the rest of the university. Are you talking here about using Microsoft Teams or Blackboard Collaborate, or
for both
undergraduates and
For undergraduates, where for MBA we use Teams.
Yeah, this is fair enough. I mean, I wonder whether most technology is more or less the same. It brings benefits, but also most technology has some pain points. And it's all about how we perhaps as educators make the most of what we're given, really, perhaps. Yeah.
And I know, for example, I work as part of my design thinking module. I worked with Deloitte, and they're doing, they had already beginning of the metaverse. They already had their teaching, not like we do it in Teams or like what. It's about joining with your avatar a room and sitting there with your avatar. And yes. So I saw how it was. And I, at the time, I wasn't that convinced of us moving learning into the metaverse. Having said this, I do believe that the metaverse has many potentials, which I explore with my students.
Yes.
How do you feel about the metaverse?
Well, thank you for asking. I think I'm sat on the fence. I have to be careful that I don't turn into some old fuddy-duddy. The only thing I would say is that technology sometimes promises more than it delivers, and therefore I remain slightly skeptical. For example, 3D TV and 3D cinema, I think it's been decided, isn't necessary. We can still enjoy film and television. We are creative and imaginative enough to turn flat into something much more. And therefore, I wonder, I can see why, high definition graphics and three dimensions are important when I'm fighting zombies and living in other imaginary worlds if I'm playing a computer game. But when it comes to education, I sit on the fence. I saw a simulation recently by a supermarket who was showing us the future of shopping, where we might have VR and we might be picking things off the shelf. And I'm thinking, is that really necessary? Do we have to recreate the physical world, or can we be more transformative and perhaps spend our energies better on other things? But I reserve judgment. I've been wrong before. And let me just say this. An example, the opposite to that, is that we sometimes have problems where students don't want to turn on their cameras. Yeah, they don't want to show themselves. And we sometimes criticize them. But I think we could be more sympathetic to that situation. And it might be that representing ourselves as an avatar, not necessarily in three dimensions, would be better than just a photo, some sort of moving image. So maybe in some ways technology can help us, but I'm perhaps still slightly skeptical. But again, I've been wrong before, so let's see. So you were just going to say something about?
No, I was just saying my hopes for the metaverse. What are my hopes for the metaverse? There are two areas that I actually have high hopes in the metaverse. Is first of all to lose my accent, so that my avatar speaks perfectly English, or even with a Scottish accent. So, you know, I think Scottish accents, we all know, sound good. So actually having my avatar speak differently.
Yes.
And the other aspect where I think the metaverse can do a lot is dementia. Actually, okay, Help people with dementia cope better. And I think loads of potential in healthcare generally.
Yes. Ah, well, there's a big growing and important market. And if it can help with that, then that's certainly a very important area. Interestingly, you also mentioned earlier about the way that the perhaps Teams meetings, online meetings, and move to online has helped sometimes with students who may have been in minority groups may have benefited. And I wonder, again, changing your accent and changing the way we look so that we can get over some of those issues might also help. Yes,
absolutely. Talking about the cameras, so as part of my breakout groups, I offered last year the option to, you know, sometimes instead of putting them to specific groups, I say a group one is the group that shows their camera, group two is the one that talks, and group three is the one which just does their comment, you know, written comments.
Oh, yeah.
And actually, hardly anybody goes into group one.
Yes.
Either they want to talk or they want to write the comments.
Yes.
Showing the camera, because from the very beginning, there was this reluctance.
Yes.
Wasn't welcome, because, you know, now we are in the habit of not showing our faces, and
yes,
it's difficult to change it.
Yes. No, it's interesting, actually. But I like the idea there of giving the students that choice perhaps decision, yeah, opportunity to decide for themselves which group to go towards. This is all great. Fascinating conversation, by the way. Really enjoyed talking to you and finding out about your work and your research as well. What about how are things looking, gearing up for the new term? How do you think things will go? I suppose all of us are waiting to see what will happen in terms of social distancing and students back on campus. But what are you hoping for, or what are you planning for this term and maybe what's to come?
Well, I mentioned the metaverse because it's last term was my research term. So this term is like the first term I'm teaching after Zuckerberg showed us 1 hour and 20 minutes of the metaverse. So I do hope students embrace and start to think about what can we do and what can the metaverse do to us. Also new on my program, which I'm really excited about, is my esports initiative. Because last summer, Warwick has created this the esports center, and the first, you know this, but for the listeners, first esports center for a university in the UK, I believe. Yeah. And within the week, I contacted the guy, and I was the first, actually, of all lecturers at Warwick, not just WBS, who asked him to integrate esports into my teaching. The esports center is coming.
Yes.
Esports is presenting on esports. We are going to play games.
Yes.
We are going to see how the technologies used for gaming, also AR, VR, and generally, are used to help us in the metaverse. So that's the link.
Yes,
and
yes.
So I'm really excited about combining esports and the metaverse in my teaching.
Ah, well, this sounds good. And although I'm still sitting on the fence as far as education is concerned and the idea of the virtual world, there's no doubting, is there, how big gaming and esports has become. And that's fantastic for Warwick. But that sounds like something that I will look forward to following up with you, because that sounds like a fantastic initiative. So I'll look forward to hearing more about that. And that sounds like another great opportunity for your students as well. So good luck with that. Hope that goes well. Sounds great. And what about if there's anybody thinking, well, I like this idea of blogging and vlogging and getting my students to use these methods for reflecting and developing other skills. Do you have any quick tips or advice for anybody thinking about doing it?
Well, they can start reading my blog on it. So if they Googled my name, and they can see that I've blogged in the past. I've given in the past my instructions to students. I've given past examples from students. So I'm happy for anybody to contact me as well.
Great. Well, we'll be sure to put a link to any of that information that, and particularly to your blog as well, in the podcast notes. So thank you for that. Well, I really appreciate your time today, Isabel. It's been fascinating catching up with you, and I hope that we can stay in touch and we can find out more about some of the things you've mentioned today. Thank you ever so much.
Thank you, Jim.
Thanks once again to Isabel Fisher for inviting us in to hear all about blogging, vlogging, AI marking, the metaverse, esports, and so much more. Plenty of digital food for thought. I hope you enjoyed it as much as I did. Until next time, from me, Jim Judges, thanks for listening to this Warwick University LDCU Talking Online Learning podcast.